I'd like to welcome everybody for our second lesson on 1 Timothy. And those of you that are listening to this by the internet or however you listen to the Bible study, welcome. We're glad you're a part of it. We've got almost a full house here today. And so it's always good. There are some that are missing, but it's just good to see a full table of everybody around here. As we begin this Bible study. So we're going to do a little review of what we talked about last week. And yes, Dina Struck is here. She answered everything 100%. But it doesn't mean she'll get them 100% today. But we'll see. But we're glad that everyone is here. So let's get into our study. Everyone's got a worksheet. The opener has got 5 questions today. It's just a little review from last week. And if you don't know what they are, that's okay too. That's why we're here. We're here to learn. Okay, the first one is give one reason. Just one reason. There might be different people that have different answers, and it's going to be fine. For 1 Timothy having been written. What is a reason? What's one reason why this book was written? And you can think about
it.
Answer? Yes, you can.
You can. Well, because Paul was going to be turning over his ministry to Timothy, so yeah. To encourage Timothy.
Yep. Paul is older by age, and he is helping out a younger pastor by the name of Timothy, and he has some real concerns of wanting to be helpful to Timothy as he pastors, and Paul is coming to the end of the rope, end of his life, and so he is to encourage the younger pastor known as Timothy. Very good, Dina. We will accept that answer. Any other answers you might have? There's more than one.
Well, it's a letter to Timothy, and
correct.
It was just a letter of encouragement.
Yep. Yep, encouraging him. Things that he will probably deal with or encounter in his ministry. So he's there encouraging in this letter as well as giving some instructions and exhortations. And don't ask me what exhortations means. But it's very important, I know that. Anything else that comes to your mind? Why the 1 Timothy was written?
False,
good answers.
False teachers.
All right, yeah, there's false teachers that Paul is encouraging Timothy to be aware of and to continue to call them out and defend the gospel in light of their false teachings. Very good. Anything else?
Well, one part I got, I have this, what the Bible's all about book.
Okay.
And I read that, you know, what's written in the Bible is God's word, it is gospel, it mm-hmm. is true. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of these false teachers would go to preach, but their life skills were not up to the preachings of the Bible.
Right. They didn't match.
They didn't live yep. what the Bible
yep.
was about.
Correct. Yep. It's always very important.
Yeah.
You know? Walk the talk. Preach. No. Yeah. Teach what you preach. Live what you preach. Something like that, too.
Yeah.
All right, very good. That book that Kathy is talking about is Henrietta Mears, I bet. Yep, it's Henrietta Mears. She's a well-known Sunday school teacher and very helpful. Very helpful. Her book is called What the Bible is All About. All right, let's go to number 2. What are 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus called? These are 3 letters in the New Testament, 3 books. They are called what? Specifically called?
Pastoral letters.
Excellent, Jan.
I just read it right here.
Oh. they're called the pastoral epistles, which takes to the next question there on your sheet. No, it doesn't. Number 4. Let's go to number 4 on the opener there. It says, what's another name for an epistle? Bobby.
One.
What? What does it mean? Epistle means letter. A letter.
What's that?
That was an apostle.
Apostle.
Yeah, 1 cent. Yeah, that was last week.
When I was in the first grade, we would make the wrong answer.
Right. Like that answer might come up another time.
It might.
Okay, but what's an apostle? You know, the Gnostics and Anna with your...
What's another name for an epistle? It's called just a letter.
A letter.
A letter. That was number 4 on the opener there. Let's go back to number 3. Bobby, you can redeem yourself with this one. Who wrote the epistle of 1 Timothy?
Paul.
Hey, very good. And he's always referred to, usually, as how?
I'm sorry.
He's always referred to, usually, as how? What's kind of in front of his name?
Another name for Paul.
Yeah, he's always...
The apostle Paul.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There's your apostle.
The 1 cent Paul?
Yeah. 1 cent Paul. He always refers to himself, even in the salutation, the beginning of a lot of his letters, he refers to himself as the Apostle Paul. Now, how do you become an apostle? This is not on here. You know, there's a difference between being a disciple and an apostle. Were all the 12 disciples of Jesus, did they become apostles?
They did.
So there's a key thing about being an apostle. And what could that be?
I'd say teaching.
Well, it's part of it.
Became pastors?
Yeah. You had to see Jesus. An apostle is someone who had spent time with Jesus, had seen Jesus, and that's why Paul always refers to himself as the least of the apostles, because he didn't see Jesus until later on the road to Damascus, which is a long time after, you know, the resurrection and the ministry of Jesus, where the disciples were with Jesus for 3 years. They walked with him, talked with him, ate with him. But you got the Apostle Paul, who is so different, comes from a whole different background than the disciples did. But that's what makes one an apostle, is that you must have spent time or seen Jesus. It's real. He did see him. Okay, the last one, number 5, we're just reviewing last week with some other very interesting side bits here. Number 5, name one thing that you know about the Apostle Paul. Name one thing you know about Paul.
His name was Saul.
There you go. That's not his real name. He was born with the name Saul, who later on, who changed his name to Paul?
Jesus.
Yeah, Jesus did. And so he said, from now on, you will be called Paul, not Saul. It's not any different than you think of Abram and Sarai in the Old Testament. Abram became known as?
Abraham.
Sarai became known as?
Sarah.
You've got Jacob, who had the 12 sons. Well, the Lord said, your name is not going to be Jacob. You are going to be called?
Israel.
So there's a name change that's kind of like you're given a new life, a new name. And for us today, what is our name that we've been given?
Christian.
Yeah, Christian. You can easily say that. I am a child of God. I'm a Christian. That's my name. So it can be Karen Christian. Bobby Christian, Donna Christian, Bruce Christian, Denny Christian. It's a name that we have been given because we are a follower, we are a believer in Jesus Christ.
I just got to interject this, but Dina, this has been, a couple of years ago. I just remember when we did that with the Joy Kids, the missionary ones, and I just remember every week we would talk to those kids about what is a Christian? It's a Christ follower, mm-hmm. one who follows Christ.
Yep.
And we really try to help understand
Yeah, well, I think that's something we got to remind one another about, I think, a lot of times, very often. I mean, kids, a lot of kids don't really know what does it mean. And then it's like, okay, it's a follower of Jesus, okay, but what does that mean? You know?
Was Paul married?
No.
Didn't he always have a little reputation for not liking women or something?
Yeah, I don't, and I think that is a false,
isn't it?
A false... what do you want to call it? He's been, but you think of what this guy did. He couldn't have a wife because he was sold out to spread the gospel, and he went all different places. I mean, if he had a wife, do you think that marriage would have worked? I mean, he was gone a lot.
And he was in prison a lot.
Yeah, I mean, wherever he went, he was in trouble. He got in trouble, no matter where he went. I mean, if Paul said to you, come with me, I'm going to go here, go there, I would say, I'm not going to go with you. Because wherever you go, there's trouble. But that's one of the traits about him. He always got in trouble no matter where he went, to the point where he ended up being martyred for the faith in Rome. And I believe he was beheaded in Rome.
Don't you think he got the reputation because he told women to have their heads covered?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then, he told the guys, get married if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, have to devote your life to.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you have to go back to history at that time period, too, is when he is teaching these things, you know. I mean, I think we'll get into a place here in 1 Timothy where it says something about women should be quiet or something.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know. And you got to go way back in the history of saying, okay, now, why does he say that? You know, and we'll wait till we get there. That'll be probably in 2023. And I want all you women to be here that day we talk about it. Okay. Marlene, you going to be here?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. Looking at Paul, what are some things you know about Paul? We know his name was Saul to begin with. It was changed later by the Lord to be the Apostle Paul. What else do you know about Paul?
He persecuted Christians.
Yeah, he persecuted Christians. What does it mean to persecute Christians?
He hunted them down.
Yeah, he was a hunter of Christians. He wanted to put them in jail. I mean, he was there. Who was the first Christian martyr? One who died for his faith. Who was
Stephen?
Was Saul there?
I guess so.
He was.
Yeah.
He was there and he gave approval by watching the clothing. And I don't know if it was these other guys' clothes or if it was something to do with Stephen's clothing. I don't know. I'll have to go back and read that. But how was Stephen killed?
Stoned.
It's a terrible way to die. I mean, you kind of hope the first rock that hits you is a big one, or it hits you so that you don't feel anything else. But how many times was Paul stoned? It's more than once.
Was it three times?
Yeah, I think three comes to my mind. But I don't know, he was flogged too. Mm-hmm. I mean, Paul wore the scars of the things that happened to him because he preached the gospel. He gave the gospel. So I mean he had to look terrible, even after he's healed up, because he had scars all over the place. Maybe big bumps on his head, too.
Have you ever noticed, though, in those countries, they still
do that.
Stone. They throw rocks at, you know. Yeah.
It's still practiced today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In certain places
so
in the world.
It's been a long, long journey for that type of punishment from people.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if this happened to you, but I mean, I think of reading the part, you know, where John the Baptist, you know, after the dance of Herodias' daughter, when she said she wanted the head of John the Baptist on a platter. You know, I used to read that and go like, that would never happen today. You know, the beheading thing would never happen today in this civilized world we live in. And yet, it happened a lot. With ISIS and, you know, back in the day that they carried out mass beheadings along the Mediterranean Sea or some lake. You know, that was a news reporter that was shown actually getting his head cut off by a guy with a knife. Terrible. I mean, you go, how evil can man be? And man can be very, very evil. I just think of Ukraine. How can you just start blowing up civilians in cities and think nothing of it? I can't handle that.
How can you kill a baby when it's partially born?
Exactly. It's another thing, too. Killing children. Yeah, and God knows that man is like this. I mean, he had to come to the conclusion, I'm going to wipe out man, but keep one family, which is Noah. And he started all over again. But look where we're at today. Has it gotten better?
Talking about chain works at Agape, she volunteers, my daughter in Des Moines, at Agape one day a week.
Yeah.
And they got vandalized the other night, the building.
Yeah.
And she was called to say, don't come in, because they're threatening the workers. And
well, I think there's been like 15 places that have been fired, and they set fires to places like where is it your daughter that works there or granddaughter?
Daughter,
yeah.
She just volunteers one day a week.
Yeah. But I mean, I just go like, who are these people that want to...
It's just so sad. I just can't believe it.
Do these kind of things, yeah. All right. Anything else that you know about Paul? What comes to your mind, you know, about the Apostle Paul?
He was a Roman.
No, he was a Jew.
I thought Paul was?
Mm-hmm. Because he was how do we know he's a Jew? Because he was from a certain party.
Like the Sanhedrin?
The Sanhedrin's made up of these two parties.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a Pharisee. He was trained by a man by the name of Gamaliel. Yeah, I don't know how to say the name, Gamaliel. Who was part of the Sanhedrin. But he was a Pharisee, and you can count on it that he followed the book on the Jewish law, the Old Testament. I mean, he knew it. He followed it. He was that kind of a Pharisee because he thought he was serving God by going out and persecuting Christians. Remember, that's a new faith. It wasn't the same as Judaism. And so he thought he was doing a great service because he had the in with the high priest and with the Sanhedrin. I mean, he was probably their top-notch guy. Hey, let's send Saul. To round up these people. And he did it. And he was good at it. And he was feared by the early believers as well.
I think I remember that he had his parents. One was Jewish and one was a Roman citizen or something.
No, that would be Timothy.
That's Timothy.
Yeah.
Because I thought that's how Paul got Roman citizenship. Because
well, okay. I stand correct. I think there's something to that. Yep.
It's somewhere like that.
Yeah, because he...
We don't have it right, but...
No, I think you're on the right track, because I know
you're right.
Yep. He was punished, and then he claimed he was a Roman. And then they go like, oops. And then he appealed to go see Caesar in Rome. And they didn't want him to do that because it'd get this other guy in trouble. But he said, I want to go to Rome because I'm a Roman citizen. So he would have to, I mean, he got Roman citizenship somewhere along the line with that. Very interesting. And maybe that came later on after he got converted. I mean, I really don't know. That's a good thing to kind of check out further on, Dina. It's good. Anything else about Saul? Paul? He was a very bad man who became a very good person. And it's all because of Jesus. Meeting Jesus on the Damascus Road is what really changed his whole outlook. And of course, he got to meet Ananias in Damascus. And he took some time to have to think this all through, and God was there to help him. But God had a special plan for Saul, and that he would suffer a lot for the name that he was out to destroy.
Well, he had some affliction.
And he had that, yeah.
He asked God to take it away, but God didn't.
Yeah.
And so we don't know what it is.
Yeah. That's another good point about Saul, Paul. He asked three times. You go like, well, if God didn't take it away from Paul, then I guess there's things that we might have to deal with too that God won't take away. We just have to trust him. And we find, I think that's in the second Corinthians, the last, about chapter 15, where it talks about that, where it says, my grace is sufficient for thee. That's how he ends. You know, I asked three times and God didn't take it away. I got a thorn in the flesh, but his grace is sufficient for me. So it kind of also shows a little bit what kind of guy he was as well. Well, okay, there's other things that he is probably known for, but we'll just get into our lesson today. We're looking at verses 3 through 11. 1 Timothy 3 through 11, and I think it's good for us just to read that to set the tone and our focus for the study here today. So I want to just, you can read a verse or more than one verse. It's up to you. Jan, you want to start? And if you don't want to read, just say pass.
As I urged you when I went into Macedonia, stay there in Ephesus so that you may command certain men not to teach false doctrines any longer, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies. These promote controversies rather than God's work, which is by faith. The goal of this command is love, which comes from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith. Some have wandered away from these and turned to meaningless talk. They want to be teachers of the law, but they do not know what they are talking about or what they so confidently affirm.
Very good. Karen?
We know that the law is good if one uses it properly. We also know that law is made not for the righteous, but for the lawbreakers and rebels, the ungodly and sinful, the unholy and irreligious, for those who kill their fathers or mothers, for murderers, for adulterers and perverts, for slave traders and liars and perjurers, and for whatever else is contrary to the sound doctrine that conforms to the glorious gospel of the blessed God, which he entrusted to me.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. One of the first things we notice in verse number 3 is a name of a country. What's the name of that country?
Macedonia.
Yeah, Macedonia. Does that ring a bell for anybody? Why he'd mention Macedonia? If you look at Acts 16, verses 9 and 10, Macedonia.
He had a vision, David.
Yeah, he had a vision. What was that vision about?
A man.
A man, yes. What was the man doing?
Urging him to come.
Wanting him to come to Macedonia.
Oh, yeah.
For what reason?
Because
have some homemade have some homemade ice cream?
No.
But he said, come help us.
Help, yeah. Yeah.
The interesting thing about that little section there, when I was pastoring in Wahpeton, well, actually it's Breckenridge, North, Breckenridge, Minnesota, I was preaching in Acts. And of course I go like, you know, every time I start preaching in Acts, something happens. And this is a time when we heard that there was a group of people just starting a church in Dickinson, North Dakota. And I preached on this text. And we went out to Dickinson just to see the people. I didn't want to leave Wahpeton or Breckenridge. There was no reason to leave. We had a good ministry there. But I just wanted to go out there to see the people because I just thought, just encourage them. And as we listened to the people, they had everything going for them except they didn't have a pastor. And I read this text. And I'm going like, here's people saying, come and help us. All we need is a pastor. Which is all, that's all they needed. And so that's what God started working in my heart. We eventually ended up going to Dickinson, North Dakota because of that verse. The Macedonian man, come and help us. And so I thought, you know, I think of that, and then I think of Harbor of Joy. I go like, here it is again. You know, a lot of great things going on, but you need a pastor. And I said, I know I can do that. I don't like where I was at. But it wasn't the reason why I came down here was to be a pastor. I thought I was done. And so here we are. And it's interesting how God guides and leads. And here with Paul, he gives a vision of a man in Macedonia. And all he sees in his vision is there's a man there that's saying, come and help us. And so what does Paul do?
He went.
You know, he went. He went and he had to trust that God wanted him to be there and whatever God had planned to be a part of that. So we go back, you know, to Acts 16 and those verses. The country of Macedonia becomes very, you know, it's just a little insight of importance that Paul wanted to go someplace else. But it said that the Spirit of Jesus kept him from going there. He has other places he wanted to go, but he couldn't go. But when he had this vision for Macedonia, and the man from Macedonia calling, come and help, then it was like that's where God wanted him to go. And he did. So he went to Macedonia, but he tells Timothy what? To come and join him? What did he tell Timothy?
Stay in Ephesus.
Yeah, but you stay in Ephesus. And now Ephesus, remember what we talked about last week? Ephesus at this time in history is what kind of a city? Remember?
Pagan?
Well, there's definitely pagans there. Because they worship, what did they worship? Ephesus was known for one of the seven wonders of the world at that time. And what was that wonder of the world that they worshiped in Ephesus? A goddess by the name of?
Artemis or Artemis.
Yeah, Artemis.
Say that again.
Artemis is the name of a god. So, I mean, she must have been basically an idol or some huge statue or something that made her one of the seven wonders of the world. I mean, if you went to Ephesus, you'd want to go and see this amazing feature. But Ephesus became what in the Christian faith at this time? There became a lot of believers, a lot of Christians came from Ephesus. It was probably the real hub of Christianity. And it got to the point that there became so many Christians in Ephesus that it upset the silversmiths. The silversmiths were complaining that their sales were way down because they made silver
idols,
or who knows, jewelry or whatever it was, or rings or bracelets, whatever, with Artemis, because that was their livelihood. It was where people would come and to worship Artemis. But now when Paul was there, he brought the gospel, and people believed and trusted in what was said, what he taught. And they became Christians, and therefore they stopped worshiping idols because their allegiance was to Jesus Christ. So Timothy is in Ephesus, and he that's why he's a pastor there. Remember, we talked about that last week, that there were thousands of Christians there. Where did they meet?
In the homes.
They met in home churches, because there was no such thing as a church at that time, like we understand it today. The church, the idea of a church building did not come for at least another 200 years after Paul. So it became an actual building where Christians would come together to meet. That was called the church. But here in Ephesus at this time, people met in houses, house churches, and they would have one leader that would kind of be the pastor, and that's how they were taught. That's how they were trained and worshiped the Lord together in houses. At that time, it's changed a lot when you think of how it's done today.
Yeah. I hesitate to bring this up, but
go ahead, Bruce.
3 years ago, Donna and I were flying to San Antonio on Southwest Airlines. So we had split up. She was on one side of the plane, and I was on the other. So the guy sitting next to me was reading his Bible. So, of course, I have to strike up a conversation. The guy belonged to he didn't belong to any church at all, but there was a group of people that just met in homes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, we really didn't get into what he was preparing for the next lesson, but they just did Bible study. Instead of going to church on Sundays, they went to somebody's home and they worshiped.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he told me that it's the fastest growing religion in the United States. Is small groups of people.
Okay. Yeah.
Doing Bible studies.
Yeah. Yeah. They're called cell groups. At one time, that's what they were called. A cell group is meeting in homes. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, as long as you're reading, studying the Bible together. There's some people who go that direction sometimes for other reasons, too. You know, some people don't like the organized church. They think God never intended the church to be organized, which I go like, well, that can be debated, too. But there's some people that they get so bent out of shape because giving, it becomes financial for them. And all they can think of is like, the only reason why the church cares about me is because of my wallet or bank account. Now, granted, there are churches that are like that. But you should never have to take it that way. But some people look at the church that way, therefore do not want to be involved in any church because they just like not having any kind of strings attached to it or something. And so they're there. I mean, and I, what was he reading or studying? Do you know Bruce? Well, talking with him?
It was a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
It might have been in Ephesians, but I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been a few years. It's been 2 or 3 years.
Okay. No. Okay. Yeah.
Do you suppose people that meet in homes take an offering?
Some do. You know, just it kind of depends upon kind of what the group is like and who leads them, I guess. But you know, you sure could do that. I mean, the home group that meets could take an offering and give it to some cause. As well.
I decided we should take an offering here today.
Yeah.
And I'll collect it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it does happen. We went out to Prince George, British Columbia to just went out there just to see if it was a possibility for us to move there and to pastor a church out there. But they called it a cell church, a cell home. It was just where people got together in the homes, and that's where they worshiped. They didn't have a church. And there was a paper pulp, the industry there was out of wood, and it was down in a kind of a bowl. And as soon as we kind of drove down to the first stoplight, I don't know where this wind came from, but it was dusty and windy, and I'm going, what in the world's going on? It was almost like the devil said, get out of here. I don't want you in this city. Well, we met with the people, and they were looking for a pastor at that time too, but then at the same time, the news was they were closing down, they're shutting down the paper mill. And that takes away a lot of jobs. And so there's people that were moving out of the place and going to other places, and they were just like, they're not sure what was going to happen there. And I just said, well, I just thought it depends on how committed the group you have is, how this can work, you know. But I met with them, and we came back. And it never did go back. You know, it's just one of those things. You're like, we'll just check it out and see if this is a place. But there again, it was a different style of people meeting together that were definitely believers. But having a church to meet at was not a big priority for them. It was just meeting in homes. But then, you know, that causes other things that you got to be thinking about. What, you know, when you got young families that come to a home. Who's going to watch the kids? Who's those kinds of things? I mean, you just run into different things that take place and something like that. So, but you go back to the early church. I mean, they had to deal with a lot of these things too. The home church—that's where they met in. And I guess parenting was different back then than it is today. So. All right, we got about 13 minutes left here. We might not get through this one. Dennis, this is a terrible thing.
No.
All right, let's go to number 3. Verses 3 and 4, it says, what does Paul want Timothy to do? Now, there's a reason why Paul went to Macedonia, but he's also telling Timothy, this is what you need to be doing while you're there in Ephesus. And what does he instruct Timothy to do?
Well, he needs to stay there because it sounds like some people are getting off the railroad track.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep,
that's a good way to put it, Bobby. Yeah. There are some people that were taking the people into church in the wrong direction. Some false teaching. Go back to false teaching. And so Paul is saying to Timothy, no, you need to stay there and keep doing what you are doing. And he's going to say more things as we go along in 1 Timothy here. So he wants Timothy to stay and kind of take care of the church, at least who he's dealing with at that time in Ephesus. Number four, what would you say is sound doctrine? Because we find here there's false teaching. Well, then what is sound doctrine? Is sound doctrine the opposite of false teaching?
Be Bible-based.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Go ahead.
Were the laws that these other sects went by anything that dealt with the Bible?
Yeah. Yep. But they would not follow those laws themselves.
Oh, okay.
And that's why
they weren't
that was part of the reason for there being false teachers. Yeah. We'll get into that a little bit later here.
In verse 5, right after it talks about the false teachers, he says the goal of this command is to love, which comes from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Which means what, Bruce?
Oh, nothing like me.
Well, that's, you know, and that's what makes the difference of the teachers. Paul wants to make sure that the pastors that are teaching the Christian faith, that they preach it out of love. Because the false teachers did not do that. That was missing. A real love, a real heart, it was so different. And so Timothy had the good conscience, the good heart, and that's what he was supposed to also help teach others, that as you preach and teach, this is the way it needs to be done. The false teachers would not be so gracious. So another way, just, you know, answering sound doctrine, it says, you know, anything that distorts or denies salvation by grace alone. Anything that distorts or denies salvation by grace alone would be
false.
Yeah. So it comes in, you know, salvation is, you know, grace alone, faith alone, God's word alone. I mean, we have all those kinds of things. That's true. But it's never ever by the W word.
Works,
yeah. And that's what you'd find. False teachers would be teaching you need to do this and this and this, or don't do that or that or that in order to be saved. Salvation is a gift from God, and we find that in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9, tells us that we are saved by grace through faith. And verse 9 talks about it's not anything that we can do. So it's a gift from God, salvation is. God does it. He wants to give it to us. We must receive it by faith. When we study the Bible, it's, you know, this is a faith thing that we, in order to understand it, it's, we got to come and look at it through the eyes of faith. I may not always understand everything, because I sure don't understand everything in the Bible, but I believe it's true, even if I don't understand it. If it's there, I believe it, but I might not be able to explain it. There's I probably shouldn't say this, but I'll say it anyway. But you know Carol Banta. She grew up in a church where they would have Athanasian Sunday.
Halfway?
Athanasian. There's the Athanasian Creed. And so there would be one Sunday out of the year that there would be a sermon on the Athanasian Creed. And so she asked me if I would ever do that. And I said, man, that's a long creed. But I said, I could probably do it in parts, you know. And I might do that. But she said that was a couple weeks ago is when they had that Sunday. It was Athanasian Creed Sunday. So, I mean, I did read it this last week here, and I just go like, Shazam. it would be quite a challenge to do it, but it's there. The three creeds that are accepted worldwide by the Christian faith community, the Christian church, is the Apostles' Creed, the Nicene Creed, and the Athanasian Creed. The Apostles' Creed is the shortest. We say that pretty much every Sunday. Kathy's the only one I know of that can say the Nicene Creed by heart.
Well, we, in the church I attended, we said it every Sunday.
Yeah.
And then usually the Apostles' Creed was when there was a baptism.
Okay.
And also, one other time, during the year.
Okay.
But always the Nicene Creed, yeah. Every Sunday. Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing to remember about the creeds is that sometimes there was a reason for the creeds to come to be. There was an issue of false teaching going on in the early church where all of the theologians and pastors and church leaders kind of came together for a council to rehash or kind of hash some of these things over. And the outcome, these took sometimes 100 years or more to do all this. But the final outcome would be the Apostles' Creed, the Nicene Creed, and the Athanasian Creed. So it's not something that was done quickly. It was something that was done over a period of great time, long time. And so the Nicene Creed, I think, was done in like the year 325, something like that. And then the Athanasian Creed, I think, came after that. But they were all finding out an answer of what the church should believe about different things to combat false things. And that's the Athanasian Creed is that the Trinity is the huge thing in the Athanasian Creed. One God in three persons. That's what that really deals with. And so over and over in different ways it says that. One God, three persons, but it doesn't mean there's three different gods. It's still one God, three persons. And it does that in a lot of different ways it comes across. So,
did that originate in the Missouri Synod?
I don't know. I just never heard of it being done.
I've heard of it, but I think Carol was.
Yeah, she is from that background, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wonder if that's okay.
Yeah. And so, I think she said too, it's like when people knew that that was the Sunday, it was going to be a long sermon. So I suppose people didn't go to church. I don't know, but I just found it interesting from Carol that that's what she remembers. And I thought, I never heard of that before, preaching on it. But we'll see what happens there. And if I do ever preach on it, you can all look at Carol Banta. You don't have to say a thing. You just look at her, and she'll kind of go like, what's that? All right. We'll just do one more question here. Number five, and we'll just stop at five. God's work is always by blank and not by blank. Ephesians 2:8-9. Fill in the blanks.
Faith.
Yes. God's work is always by faith and not by
works.
Works.
It says yourself in my Bible. Our own works. Not by yourself, which is works.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we're going to stop today because it's almost 1 o'clock.
That was good.
We just got to make sure that Bobby's here next week because the very next question, she's going to have to answer that one.
We're stopping right there.
She'll know what I'm talking about. All right, let's just have a word of prayer together and we will call it quits here.